Hi, Joel. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Well, we don't want to keep you. We know you got a tea time, so we'll see if we can make this quick. We hear you're hard at work this time of year.
Depends on what you define as hard at work. Grinding on my golf game.
Are you more of a draw, or do you have kind of the little baby fade?
Well, it depends on what the shot calls for.
Oh.
So, I mean,
he's one of those.
You got to be able to move it both ways.
That's exactly right.
Do you? I'm just trying to make solid contact with the ball, and when I do, I'm reasonably happy about how my day is going. Let's talk a little.
Tells me a lot about you.
Yeah, well, that I have young kids and just started golfing for one.
Let's talk
a little bit about what the Seahawks did, because you've gotten the chance to see a lot of the guys that they end up with here in the draft. What did you think about what they did?
I didn't think it was overwhelming, but I thought it was positive. I really like Rashad Penny, guys. I really do. I talked with several coaches in the lead up to the draft that said that he was the second best running back in the draft because Barkley was so dynamic, right? And he kind of separated himself as almost like the shooting star, and rightly so. But when you looked at like pure running backs from a tailback standpoint between the tackles, the ability to carry the load of the game, the ability to carry the ball 25, 30 times, maybe even on a week in, week out basis if needed, I thought, and most people in the league thought, that Rashad Penny was the steal of the class, if you will. So just based on that, I thought it was extremely positive. Everything else, let's face it now. When you start getting into, you know, third, fourth, fifth rounds, everything then is just chance. You flip a coin. If it hits, great. Maybe you can get a steal there. But what you're trying to do is really find value in what I would call the meaningful rounds or the impactful rounds, which is the first and second round. And I thought that they did that, you know. So while it might not have been the splashiest draft, I thought it was certainly positive.
You do a bunch of Pac-12 games as it ends up. What do you remember of both Rashim Green and also Will Dissly, both a couple of Pac-12 guys?
Yeah, here's what's so interesting about USC is that I felt like their defense was very average at times, and then occasionally you would see them play really well. Clancy Pendergast is a guy that uses a lot of NFL schemes. Remember, he was the coordinator for the Cardinals when they went on that Super Bowl run. So I think it always behooves the team to select players that come from those NFL styles of systems. That's why I think Ohio State defenders have a lot of success in the league. I think that USC will start to have that, even though they haven't played dominant defense on a college level. They'll start to have that moving forward if Clancy remains as their defense coordinator for the next few years. So Rashim is a really good player. I always felt like his potential and talent overshadowed the production that he was giving. Now, and Brock, maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you won't. Maybe guys should just produce regardless, but it's always interesting in a front seven what guys produce, make tackles, fill up the stat sheet, and which guys don't, because candidly, I don't know what their jobs were specifically in that scheme, right? I can tell you from a 30,000-foot view, hey, he's playing a 3 technique or a 5 technique, and this is what he is or should be responsible for. But I don't know his exact coaching points. You know what I mean? So should he have produced a little bit more based on his talent and potential? Probably. Now, having said that, I can't tell you specifically what his coaching points were in order to make that defense tick.
Yeah, I think that's all very fair. And Joel Klatt with us here. Joel, it was interesting. I jumped on with Brady Quinn and Bruce Murray, the end of last week, and we were talking about the Seahawks draft. And both of them, and Brady in particular, your buddy there at Fox, that I didn't care for too much because I didn't think they did enough to help Russell Wilson. And as you look at this Seahawks team now, sans Richard Sherman and out is Michael Bennett, and do you feel like this is Russell's team? And is Brady correct? Did they do enough in this draft to equip him?
Well, they got him. You can make an argument, Brock, that he was most successful, regardless of what was going on the defensive side, he was most successful as a quarterback when he had the ability to throw big in the pocket play action pass. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think it's one of the things he does the best, Joel. Yep.
Okay. So without Marshawn, I felt like that ability was not afforded him. So I will agree to disagree with my counterparts, because drafting Rashad Penny, who is a true tailback between the tackles, power style, home run if he gets the edge style back, I think is trying to afford Russell the ability to get back to a game in which he's most effective. Now, does it look like it's the most splashiest of targets, quote unquote? No, but is it a tool that will potentially maximize Russell's ability or put him in a position where he's most comfortable or has the biggest ability or most ability to impact the game positively for the Seahawks? Possibly. You know, so from that standpoint, I think that it has helped. Now, let me move on to, can they remain a power like they have been over the last few years? Well, the only team that's been able to do that, guys, is New England. Even Green Bay has struggled. Now, you can argue that it's been injuries, but even with a quarterback as talented and as gifted as Aaron Rodgers, a quarterback carrying a team to greatness year in and year out is so rare. So you're asking the Seahawks to be competitive at a level that they have been over the last, let's say, what, 5-6 years, Super Bowl caliber team, and yet the economics of the league really don't allow it, right? I mean, all these exits are not necessarily the team's fault. I mean, it's just what happens in the modern-day NFL. The only team that has been able to sustain greatness throughout this modern-day economics has been New England. So you're asking Russell to essentially be the greatest of all time.
Well,
maybe you disagree.
No, that seems, first of all, why not? I mean, we have high expectations here in Seattle. Maybe in Colorado or L.A. and all the places you've been, you don't expect greatness. I don't know. We expect the greatest of all time here, Joe. No, I'm just kidding.
I did say greatest of all time. And listen, I gave you the counterpoint of Aaron Rodgers. Even Aaron Rodgers, who would be widely considered the second best quarterback in the league and maybe a top 10 player ever, just from a pure talent at the position, has had a hard time in the current NFL carrying his team at the top end of the league year in and year out, like Brady has.
All right, so let me ask you this. Obviously, I'm joking about expecting greatness. We do expect Russ to be great. I don't know if we expect him to be the greatest of all time or not. But I agree with pretty much everything you just said. The one thing you usually can expect from these franchise quarterbacks, though, is that even in the years when they're not great, their teams still win between 7 and 9 games, somewhere in there. And Aaron Rodgers, a Russell Wilson team, is probably not going to win 4 or 5 games. But if it is that challenging to sustain Super Bowl competitive greatness, what do you do with one of those quarterbacks once they start making in the $25 to $30 million range? If you were John Schneider, if you were an NFL GM, would you be willing to shell out that kind of dough for a quarterback?
Well, that brings up a great question, Saul, because I don't have the research in front of me.
We call it crowdsourcing.
We're going to all do it. We just ask our text machine and they give us an answer.
Let's crowdsource.
We can all do it together. What is the highest salary that any Super Bowl winning quarterback has ever commanded? I'm not saying after, I'm talking about in the Super Bowl year. See, I have a theory that you don't win Super Bowls if your quarterback is a top 4 paid quarterback in the league. That's just a theory. Like I said, I haven't done the research. Maybe we should do it more on a percentage base rather than we should the salary.
Well, you should. We should. And it's funny. We crowdsourced some of that this week. There's a really good USA Today article from last year that's got a chart on a bunch of these quarterbacks, and it just looks at them by percentage of the salary cap. And in general, the Super Bowl winner is a slightly below average. There have been some guys, and look, there's some iffy ones in there. Like Matt Ryan was right near the top. He didn't win a Super Bowl.
Matt Ryan was right there. Should have won the Super Bowl. There's no question about it.
Right.
Brees was up there, but he wasn't getting paid what he then was paid after his Super Bowl win. Roethlisberger, I believe, was a top 4 or 5 paid quarterback when they won.
Brady's always been, I mean, Brady's taken a, Brady is such a difficult thing in this, just as you said earlier, Joel, right? Because he's been to 7 of them.
Right?
Yeah. So if you can take a little less at that, right? Take a little bit less. I mean, he's still making $18 million, and I guess now may want to, in his final years, make a little bit north of that. I mean, he's not been the dirt cheap. He's not been the Russell Wilson making $400,000, or could have been Blake Bortles last year. You know, so he's not on the dirt cheap end of things, and he's taken a little bit of a family discount to continue to keep the run going.
But here's what I would say. Let's say, on average, Brady in his Super Bowl years is making, after the first, 3, so I'm talking about the second run of Super Bowls, Let's say Brady was making, and I'm estimating here, I think it's between 15 and 18. Is that correct?
Yep.
Right around there?
Yeah.
Okay, so if Brady is making 15 to 18, and we're saying, well, he's paid pretty handsomely, so you can get away with 25. Well, that's a $10, $8 million delta right there, margin. Do you know how many players you can get for annually $8 to $10 million? A lot of good players. You know, good, young, athletic, depth-oriented players that can help your special teams, that can help your defense. They can help you become a more well-rounded team. Why do you think we see the Patriots all the time have players within their first 5 years in the league that are making a resurgence after failing in their first location, and they go and they get some, you know, ridiculously low contract, and then all of a sudden they are impactful in some way. So I don't want to minimize that $8 to $10 million delta that Brady affords the New England Patriots, because I think that that is an incredibly important margin. So if we're saying, like, well, should Russell Wilson get paid this? The capitalist in me says, yes, of course. Everyone should get paid what the market bears. And the competitive, you know, organizational side of me says organizations generally, as a gross generalization, don't win the Super Bowl when their quarterback is making what I would categorize as a top five salary as it relates to a percentage of the salary cap.
Let me lay it out for you the way they did in this USA Today article. Stephen Ruiz wrote this, and he says the record for highest cap hit percentage taken up by a Super Bowl winning quarterback was Steve Young with 13.1% in the first season, when teams are still getting used to building a roster under a budget. Since then, only four quarterbacks have ever won a Super Bowl while accounting for at least 11% of their team's cap room. Wow. Steve Young, Peyton Manning twice, Tom Brady, and Eli Manning. That's it.
And if you remember,
now they've won like 15 of those Super Bowls combined, but that is interesting.
Yeah, and listen though, think about it this. That 49ers team, if I'm not mistaken, was being a little bit grandfathered in. Remember the that was really the first era of true free agency and the free market as we would describe it in the National Football League, which is, so it's a little, you know, they had guys that were being grandfathered in on contracts in that. So that's a little bit misleading. I think it's more you go towards like the Manning with the Broncos and so on and so forth.
So what do you do?
What do you do with Russell Wilson when he wants to get paid next year?
Gosh.
Because you can lay out all these facts, and you can lay out all these numbers.
I hear you. If I'm John Schneider, I say no way. If I'm Russell Wilson, I fight for every penny.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what they did last time, you know, and even in that deal where it was a no-brainer, where it was ultimately going to get done and he was going to get his first contract. But it does lead to, you know, Salk said this, and I think I would agree, and you too, Joel, that we've done this show for almost 10 years. There will be no bigger conversation in our 10 years than what you're going to do with Russell. This little conundrum that you find yourself moving forward, I think will be the single biggest conversation on our air in 10 years.
And all, I believe, all the leverage rests with the quarterback. Because what are you going to do, go beat the Browns?
It's so painful.
And like, yet, go ahead.
You can go ahead. So brutal. All right, we have to mull this over.
That was a downer at the end. What are you going to do?
What do you think about UW? What do you think about Chris Peterson? What do you think about the Huskies' chances in the Pac-12 next year, Joel? Quickly, before you got to get to your tee time and warm-ups.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm kidding. I'll talk to you guys as long as you want.
the warm-ups.
I'm a big fan of Pete. I think that team is very good. Probably should win the Pac-12 this year, probably. Now, whether they do or not, I think, to me, it rests on the development of Jake Browning and more specifically his strength. If this guy decides to get in the weight room a little bit, and I know that that's a weird conversation as it relates to a quarterback, but he needs to get stronger because he doesn't drive the football well enough outside the numbers and down the field. He had great deep threats, which allowed him to throw the football down the field earlier in his career. But now as they've left and as he's tried to develop other targets, you know, Pettis leaving, he's obviously lost John Ross. He needs to get better of being a factor himself, not just using the weapons around him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the entirety of the season rests for Washington. If that quarterback, Jake Browning, can develop into an impactful player himself, I think that they're going to have a great chance, if not be my leading candidate team to win the Pac-12.
Saw him a couple times this spring, Joel, and I'm not going to say he's bulked up or he's any bigger, but there is just a command. Like, there's talk of the QB competition and these freshmen and these Elite 11 guys, no chance. And, in fact, Jake Haener is going to, I think, be the backup next year, a kid that nobody knows that throws it very well. But, Jake, if you wanted to see just with your eyes, like, man, is there a little more? Is there a little more juice? Is there a little more pop, right? Like that fastball into a glove, there is a little bit more. And I think a lot of that comes with exactly what you said, that he knows if he's going to beat Auburn week one with the whole nation watching and really their national title chances on the line week number one, he's got to be a difference maker. He was this spring. He's got to be in the fall for sure, man.
And the next part of that is what comes with that presence that you were talking about and the ability to drive the football. It's, remember, and when I talk about it, it's not just throwing the football, but Brock, it's also in the ability to sustain physical games, because I've seen Jake shy away from it. You know, there's a term that I always like, you either answer the bell or you don't as a competitor. And I'm not talking about fist fights, right? I'm just talking about the competitive nature of a game. And sometimes you get into games as a quarterback where it's tough. Third downs are tough. Third and eight is tough. You're getting hit right in the chops and you've got to answer the bell. And at times Jake has shied away from that. I don't know if it's just a pure personality thing, but he needs to be more of a presence when Washington needs him. You know, I need a little less Eli Manning face and a little more Tom Brady face from Jake Browning, if you want to put
and
it
actually,
that way.
The guy he played in his bowl game is what you want. You want Trace McSorley.
Yeah.
Right? You
really do. That guy answers the bell.
Every play.
I would take the skill set of Jake Browning 10 times out of 10 over Trace McSorley and the mindset and competitiveness of McSorley 10 times out of 10 over Jake Browning.
What's going into your warm-up before you – like, are you at a point before you go play a game of golf where you've got to warm up in a very specific way in order to help your score?
Well, of course. I mean, we're trying to achieve greatness here.
Of course.
I mean, I chip first.
Okay.
I go to the short game area, and I hit usually 15. Sometimes I need 16 or 17 chips.
Oh, wow.
5 to 3 different cups.
Wow.
And what I'm trying to do is hit the first 2 short of the cup and then the last 3 past the cup, just to get the feel of, like,
is there a stretching program?
We're way late.
Have a good round today, Joel. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
I mean, that's the goal. That's the goal. You guys cut in warm up time.
See ya. There you go. There's Joel Klatt, one of our favorites from Fox Sports.